Welcome to 2% with Michael Easter. Today is Monday, March 25th, 2024. Another beautiful day, another great day to be alive. Quick housekeeping before we dive in. Like all 2% Monday posts and their podcasts, all subscribers get free full access. Full access to 2% Wednesday and Friday posts and their podcast versions. Those are for members only. Non-members get a decently long preview. Members are people who live better, have fun, and don't die. So if you want to become a member, there is a link in the post at twopct.com. Check it out. Also, the 2% screen time challenge is off and running. How does it feel to be on your phone less? I'm feeling pretty good. My screen time is way lower. Okay, let's roll into our post. The United Nations in Oxford just released the 2024 World Happiness Report. So this is an annual study of truly epic proportion that dives into world happiness. It studies what leads to happiness, how happiness is changing globally, and what we can do to be happier. Now, first, some bad news about this. For the first time in the report's 12-year history, the United States fell out of the top 20 rankings. So the country dropped from 16 last year down to 23 this year. That is a pretty big drop. Now, by the way, this is just behind the United Arab Emirates, which is a country without formal democracy or free speech. So this is not great. I have a graph in the piece at 2%, twopct.com. If you want to see how different countries have changed over time, you can see the US kind of rose and then it just took this big dive recently. Now, I've got some good news as well. World happiness reports going back to 2012 contain wide and deep streams of wisdom on happiness. So really, no matter where the country that you live in ranks, you as an individual can apply the report's lessons to your life to live better and happier. So that's what we're going to cover today. We're going to cover five strong and sometimes counterintuitive happiness findings from these reports. Number one, find ride or die friends. Now, a quick summary of this section that we're going to cover is feeling like you have social support or people who have your back is powerful for boosting happiness. It beats in-person interactions and can outweigh the costs of loneliness. The details on this, what do we mean by that? So we all know that loneliness is up and that in-person interactions can help counter loneliness. But that doesn't mean that just putting yourself out in front of others is automatically going to make you more happy. Now, I wrote the somewhat flip lines in 2020 in my book, The Comfort Crisis, and I'm going to read two paragraphs from that book here. A growing wave of government reports and popular books, podcasts, and TED Talks are calling attention to the loneliness problem and giving advice to be less lonely. The messages are essentially, get out there with a positive attitude, buddy. Work at a coffee shop or library. Go to a party or concert. Join a softball team or a running club. Talk to strangers. These methods are probably helpful, and we should surely all work on building strong human bonds. But I'm also skeptical of the idea that, like, some core-swilling guy who plays shortstop for a softball team I signed up for could ever provide me with real emotional support or insight into myself, end quote. Now, more research is suggesting that I was onto something with that semi-smart-ass paragraph there. There is a powerful third element of the sociality slash happiness riddle that we often overlook, and that is feeling like we have people who support us. The scientists of the happiness study, here's what they wrote. Quote, both social support and loneliness affect happiness, with social support usually having the larger effect. That means having people who have your back. Now, this partly explains, too, why the study found that older adults were, on average, happier than younger people. From the report, and I'm quoting here, in all global regions, the oldest members of the population, those in the boomer and earlier generations, feel more socially supported and less lonely than those in the younger generations, despite having less frequent actual interactions with all groups except neighbors. This ability to gain more perceived support with fewer interactions likely helps to explain why life satisfaction so often rises after middle age, even as the frequency and seriousness of health problems increases. End quote. Of course, positive social interactions with anyone boost happiness and reduce loneliness. So we obviously need to chase those, But here's the deal. As I wrote in my book, Scarcity Brain, and there's an entire chapter on happiness that really just, I think, encapsulates how I think about these topics. Quote, research and common sense suggest it's better to have one great friend you truly care about and can count on than a million mediocre ones. So how do you use this? What's the takeaway here on this one? Get yourself at least one ride or die friend. Developing these relationships, it obviously takes more time and effort. So here is what you can do. The following can help you build great friends you truly care about and can count on. One, be open and honest and don't worry how you come across to the other person. If they don't like who and how you are, they're not a good fit. You don't want to have any pretenses with your friendships here. Number two, show up. Answer the call or text. Help the other person. Provide support and the other person will support you. And if they don't, again, not a great fit. Three, take on challenges together. Going through hardships with others, whether organic or manufactured, can build trust and bonds. Okay, the second thing from this report that boosts happiness. Two, follow the once a month rule of helping others. Quick section summary, helping others helps your happiness, but in-person volunteering at least once a month is most powerful. So here's some details on that. So the research consistently shows that if you float someone else's boat, your own boat is going to rise. That is good. A roughly 20-year study found that people who volunteered in the past year were not only happier, but they were also healthier. Now note, the study results weren't just because happy people are more likely to volunteer. It was a strong study. People who started volunteering became happier over time, and those who were least happy actually got the biggest boost. But here's the thing. Not all help is equal. The 2019 World Happiness Report found that we get the most happiness when the way we help others ticks three boxes. Here are the three boxes. One, we feel free to choose whether or how to help. That is to say, we're not guilted into it. Number two, we feel connected to and care about who we're helping. Number three, we can see our help making a difference. We can actually see it happening. So this leads to an important takeaway. The takeaways and how you use this, donating money to charity is great, and we should all do that if we have the means, but helping others in person seems to be more powerful. A study in Frontiers in Psychology found volunteering compared to charitable donations had a slightly stronger association with psychological well-being. This is likely because helping in person allows us to tick those three boxes that I just mentioned. Okay, so how often should you help? Here's the advice. Follow the once a month rule of helping others. In the 20-year study that I mentioned just a second ago, people who volunteered once a month, they saw the biggest happiness boost, at least once a month. Okay, number three, the third thing from these reports that improves happiness, scroll better. Okay, quick section summary. The United States drop in happiness is largely due to the falling happiness levels of young people. Doom scrolling is a key cause of that. So here's the details in this section. So when this year's World Happiness Report comes out, they separated in-country happiness levels by age group. And this allowed the researchers to discover why the US had dropped out of the top 20. So I have a graph in the piece that shows how our different age groups rank as a whole. That's at twopct.com. But the TLDR of this is the graph shows that our young people in the US, they rank 62nd in happiness, while our older people rank 10th. So our older people are doing way better than our young people. Now, the drop in youth happiness pulled us out of the top 20. That is why we got 23rd this year, simply because our young people are not doing well. And by the way, Canada experienced a similar phenomenon with its youth ranking at 58 and its older population ranking at 8th. Now, smartphones, let's get into why. Smartphones are tools. How we use them determines their impact on us. But particularly in the US and Canada, younger age groups don't seem to be using them in a way that helps their happiness. Young people not only spend more time on apps that don't seem to improve their happiness, they're also more deeply affected by those apps. So these apps hurt happiness and it gets amplified simply because it gets amplified among youth. If you want to know more about that, I have a link in the post that you can go to. But the thing is that this really applies to anyone. So more time on certain apps If they're not helping your life, that's just going to pull down your happiness. So the takeaway here, what do you do with this? It's quite obvious, right? It's identify the apps that as a whole hurt your life and those that help your life. And use the ones that help your life. Because here's the thing. It's like everyone says, you just need to blanket spend less time on your phone. And you know, while that's well-intentioned, I think we also have to be realistic that there's many apps on the phone that do enhance our life. For example, the podcasting app, whether it's your reading app. I listed off 12 different apps that have helped my life in a recent post that's at twopct.com. You can check it out. But the point is that we got to get a little intentional about this. Now, the apps that hurt people's lives, they tend to lean on the scarcity loop, which is that powerful habit loop that just sort of sucks us in and gives us a little short-term escape at the expense of long-term growth. If you want to know about that, I've written about it extensively. So what you really need to do is just figure out, how do I spend less time on the apps that are hurting my life? I don't think you necessarily have to delete them entirely. If you want to do that, that totally works for sure. I think there's some good ways to get some of the benefits that these apps provide. ClearSpace is a good tool. We've got the ClearSpace challenge going, obviously, but you know, figure it out for yourself. 4, exit the scarcity loop of happiness. Section summary, pretty straightforward. Find an ethical framework and follow it. Now the details on this. So St. Thomas Aquinas, he noticed that everything we do is ultimately to be happy. Every single action we take, the end goal is happiness. But here's the deal. We often do the wrong things. When we're unhappy, it's usually because we're doing things that provide a fleeting hit of happiness, yet ultimately distract us or drag us down. For example, people often think that salary purchases, a certain body fat percentage, or getting a fancy title at work will finally make them happy. Like that is it. They will just arrive. But here's the deal. Once you get that thing, the joy quickly fades away and you start searching for the next thing that you think is going to deliver permanent happiness. And then you just repeat that cycle for life. Now, it wasn't always like this. The 2013 World Happiness Report, they note that the way we think about happiness has changed over time. Those shifts, they haven't always been a good thing. So here's this great paragraph from the report. I'm going to read it. Quote, in the great pre-modern traditions concerning happiness, whether Buddhism in the East, Aristotelianism in the West, or the great religious traditions, happiness is determined not by an individual's material conditions, like wealth, poverty, health, or illness, but by the individual's moral character. Aristotle spoke of virtue as a key to eudaimonia, loosely translated as thriving. Yet that tradition was almost lost in the modern era after 1800, when happiness became associated with material conditions, especially income and consumption. So there's been a change over time. So the takeaway, how do you use this? Now, a certain level of income and possessions and respect from others is necessary for happiness, obviously. And some of those metrics, I think, vary country to country. So one income in one country may not be enough, where it may be plenty in another. Now, once we reach those metrics, though, those sort of base metrics, I think that there can be a diminishing rate of returns, obviously. And I do even think, quite surprisingly, that more can even backfire, depending on who you are and how you sort of process that. So the 2013 report, it proposes 4 basic values countries should begin instilling. These are like big ideas that they suggest countries should be thinking about. But here's the thing is that these 4 basic values, they can also help us at the individual level. And they come down to the following. 1, be kind to others and the environment. We'll call this the don't be a dick principle. Yeah, just use the don't be a dick principle in your daily life. You'll be all right. 2, be honest, fair, and reliable. This is basically golden rule type stuff. 3, tolerate others and their beliefs. Be open-minded and don't discriminate. 4, try to help others. Take a rising tide, floats all boats attitudes, like you just learned in the second item. Okay, next, the final thing that can improve happiness. 5, stop chasing happiness. Section summary here. You can't be happy all the time. And trying to be happy all the time might even make you miserable. So start viewing happiness as a rolling average of your behavior rather than a destination. The details on this. We seem to think that happiness is a destination, like our internal and external conditions will be perfect and that we'll finally be able to quote unquote arrive and rest once we reach this place called happiness. Now, this is a delusion. As I was researching this post, I came upon a piece in the New York Times looking at why America fell out of the top 20. That story included Eric Weiner as a source. He's a journalist who's written about happiness in different countries, and he told the Times, part of the problem, and I'm quoting here, is that we have this huge expectation of happiness in America, and so we suffer partly from the unhappiness of not being happy and the expectation that we should be happy. And not every country in the world has that. There's an assumption that if you're an American, you're wealthy and you're high tech and you're successful, you should be happy. There's a lot of data showing that the greater your expectations, the less you're happy. End quote. Now, it's also important to realize that humans didn't evolve to be happy. I wrote in Scarcity Brain, quoting again here, quote, as we evolved, sustained happiness would have killed us. It would have been more of a bug than a feature in our mental hardware. If early humans were totally happy with our situation, we would have given up the fight for survival and died off. This is why neuroscientists in the UK say that there's no biological basis for sustained happiness. They wrote, a state of contentment is discouraged by nature because it would lower our guard against possible threats to our survival. Those scientists noted, pretending that any degree of dissatisfaction is abnormal or pathological will only foster feelings of inadequacy and frustration. Given our wiring, they write, dissatisfaction is not a personal failure. Far from it. It is what makes you human. End quote. All right, the takeaway, I'm bringing this down to myself. I am happier when I do two things. One, think of happiness not as a destination, but as a rolling average of my behavior. If I simply do more of the things I know are good for me and others in the long run is important there, and less of the things that are not, I experience more happiness. Number two, follow rule 62. Don't take yourself so damn seriously. Now, I see life as a sort of grand comedy, and this rule has given me a healthy perspective during life's tough times. I'm going off script a little bit here, but that rule literally saved my life at a hard point in my life. And it helps me find humor in any moment. And that makes me happier. So have fun. Don't die. Follow rule number 62. Michael, as a reminder, we are brought to you by GoRuck, maker of the world's finest rucksacks, a Rucker 4.0 and a 30-pound plate. That is my daily driver setup. If you're wanting to ruck more, I guarantee you will be satisfied with a Rucker. M Easter 10 gets you 10% off. Next, we are sponsored by Maui Nui, harvester of the world's healthiest meat. Don't take it from me. I've got a link to research about Axis deer and its health qualities in the post, which is at twopct.com. Check out that research. It is freaking mind-blowing compared to other red meats. And then finally, we are sponsored by Momentous Nutrition, the company that made me feel good about supplements. Again, they've got contracts with the military. They've got contracts with pro sports. And that's because people can trust them. They're doing insane amount of testing and they're using the highest in quality ingredients that they can. My go-to is the essential plant protein and daily multivitamin. And I also use their creatine. So check them out. Easter gets you 15% off with Maui Nui and it gets you 15% off with Momentous. So thanks again for listening.